So the simplest case of, I mean, that is well studied and that is of great interest for people who do, for instance, Monte Carlo simulations, of course, I mean, Markov chains that are rapidly mixing. So that means that you reach equilibrium exponentially fast on some scale, and that's what people who do Monte Carlo simulations usually love to do. I guess Enzo would agree with that. And the problem there is, of course, that to know how fast this is going to be. So that means in the spectral language that you have a spectral gap of a general between the eigenvalue zero that corresponds to the equilibrium state and the rest of the spectrum, and this spectral gap will give you a speed of exponential convergence. And many people have invested a great deal of work in estimating, you know, in a concrete model this spectral gap, because that then gives you some information how good your, let's say, Monte Carlo algorithm will work. And the difficulties in particular in statistical mechanics, and maybe more so in disordered systems, is that this spectral gap, I mean, they typically be excessively small or tend to zero as the volume of the system tends to infinity or the like, so that somehow there's this rapid mixing is not present. But this is a very clear relation. I mean, you see, I mean, estimate the spectral gap, and then you get information, you get rapid mixing, and so you have a very clear description in very simple terms, and it's very general. Now, another subject that has been, you know, it's now by now something like 70 years old, is that of metastability. Metastability is a phenomenon that occurs, of course, in the, you know, in physics and seismic mechanics, enable the first order phase transitions. And there you have this, you know, this phenomenon that many people call ergodicity breaking, or almost ergodicity breaking. And metastable systems or metastable Markov chains are characterized by a breakup of phase space into what it might sometimes call quasi-invariant subspaces, to which are associated multiple, precise multiple timescales. I mean, different timescales, a fast timescale, which corresponds to rapid mixing within a quasi-invariant substate. You know, I guess in the talk of, Jean-Philippe, maybe it was this picture of, or maybe it was not Jean-Philippe, you know, you have this picture where you had only, at some place, you had only minima, which were separated by infinitely high barriers. This is sort of the extreme situation where you have an invariant subspace, and it's really invariant because you cannot cross from one metastable state to another. And however, in many systems, there is an option to cross, but this crossing is associated with a different time scale than the time scale you are interested in this within the state. So there's asymptotically a splitting of states, and somehow my computer didn't understand that I told it this was a presentation. Or maybe I'm talking too slowly. One of the two. And so then you have, you know, you have this fact that you have these rapid, these fast time scales, and you have slow time scales, and maybe you have several time scales corresponding to different barrier heights and so on in this system. And again, for at least more than 20 years of, actually 25, a quarter of a century, people have studied the effects of this in terms of spectrum, and this is sort of the situation which is now fairly well understood. And here you also have one can, at least under few additional restrictions, one can say very clearly identify the phenomenon of metastability with the presence of a finite set of exponentially or small eigenvalues which are well separated, and to which corresponds eigenstates with particular localization problems, which basically indicate the attractor of the invariant subspaces. But in very generality, you have sort of an equivalence between these dynamical properties of metastability and the corresponding spectral properties. And then, of course, one sort of understands things. This is partly exploited in numerical methods to compute invariant subspaces, because you can go and look for small eigenvalues of a generator numerically, and it's a rather useful thing in some situations to get to a problem from a numerical point of view. And so we have been working on this for quite some time, and made some of these facts, I mean, a bit more precise and maybe a bit more general. Then we started to work on aging systems with Gerard and Arousse, and Leonik and Gérard several years ago following. And then, of course, you realize that the situation in aging systems is sort of more complicated. And we thought it might be sort of nice to understand various properties of aging systems from the point of view of the corresponding spectral properties. You know? So that's somehow what I want to talk about a little bit. Although I should say that the progress has been very slow and not at all satisfactory. So let me say a few words about aging. Now, usually, and we have seen this many times during this week already, you say that a system ages. I mean, you say, well, you know, define a correlation function, and then you look at this correlation function, the time-time correlation function, and then you say, well, that this correlation function is not just a function of a difference of tw and t, then, or just a function of this t here, I mean, which is relating, I mean, which is your experimental time, then somehow the system is aging. Okay. And, okay, there are sort of different ways to age and whatever, I mean, you have sub-aging, super-aging, and I mean, how this does not depend on only on little t, there are different ways of doing that. Something which is a little bit, in my view, unfortunate about this such a definition is that it depends on the choice of a correlation function. Right? I mean, so basically, if you could say, well, you know, if you find any sort of correlation function that shows this phenomenon, then the system ages. But anyway, I would rather have a characterization which is intrinsic to the system that says, you know, the system is showing aging, not, you know, you have a correlation function that is showing aging. If you look at this particular correlation function, the system ages. So that is something that comes a little bit annoying, actually, I should say, if you want to think in terms of a spectral way of describing, because the spectrum doesn't really know about this correlation function that you choose. Right? And it is also, of course, true that there are several cases of systems where you choose different correlation functions, you get different aging behaviors. Okay, so that's something that one should keep in mind. So one thing that I would like, but I won't have really a complete answer, would be a way of, you know, describing aging. And first of all, on a dynamical way, in such a way that it doesn't really refer to a particular correlation function. But okay. So I want to say a few words about ideas in this direction. Now, and that is related to an idea that should really relate aging to localization. And ideally, one would like to say that aging should be sort of something related to localization and time. I will say a bit more in the next transparency about this. And I guess Gérard will say a few, since he now just came, will say a few words about this also in his talk tomorrow, because it's something that emerged really in the study of particular systems. So what is the idea? I mean, basically the idea is that if you have a correlation function here and you don't know what the correlation function is, but somehow the behavior of this function should depend on TW. So that should mean that when you are in TW, after time, waiting time TW, I mean, your system is in a particular subspace of configuration space where it has certain properties. And in particular, these properties should be that it has somehow a reaction time, you know, that depends on the waiting time. Okay, so basically, you would like to say that after the time tw, the system reacts at a speed capital T tw. So that would then somehow explain why you should have this typical aging behavior of correlation functions, of course, in general. So let me say a few more words about this. Actually, I think. In a particular context, Gérard will probably explain sort of a very axiomatic level. I don't know whether he's going to do it, but no, he's not going to do it. So sorry. Okay. Then let me just put up a transparency, which is sort of a tentative scenario of how one would like to see aging, which is, as I should warn you immediately, not satisfactory, and several people in the audience will say, no, I mean, there are systems that don't fit at all into this scheme, but let me put it up anyway as a suggestion. So, a bit of notation, so we take our state space S, so this is just the state space of the Markov chain, that might depend on the parameter, or it might not depend on the parameter. If it doesn't depend on the parameter, it should at least be infinite. Otherwise, it should depend on the parameter and tend to infinity at least. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. And then we will, for any subset A, denote by lambda bar of A the smallest eigenvalue of the corresponding generator, the Dirichlet eigenvalues on the boundary of A. And that is to say that if you start the process at some point 0, let's say 0 will be the post point that we will always start our process. Of course, the remark that aging always depends on the initial condition, so I mean, that's the minimal thing. I mean, the system ages depends whether it's not yet dead. So I will always assume that the process starts in some particular point 0. And then your novice tells you that the probability to stay in A is given by e to minus t times lambda bar of A. So this is the lifetime of the system within the state, in the subset A. And now, you know, you could say that one way to say that what should happen is, I mean, suppose you have a family of sets Si, subsets in S, which is increasing, and which have the property that the corresponding principal eigenvalues are decreasing. Now, it's trivial that they are decreasing. I mean, but they should sort of decrease fast and actually converge to zero. So it should be infinite. Now, it should be able to have an infinite.
Sorry, Anton, just to understand, what is the principal eigenvalue?
This is the smallest.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's the principal eigenvalue of a generator. Okay, so it's the... No, lambda bar is the smallest eigenvalue of a generator R with boundary conditions on zero boundary conditions on the outside of A. Let me make a picture.
So the system is in A. Okay.
Yeah, so you have fun. Okay, let's make a picture. No, make a picture anyway. So you have. So this is our set S, and then you have zero, and then you have. You know, okay, these sets shouldn't look really very nice. I mean, they should look messy, but let's draw them nice. And then let's say that this is S1. S2. And so you ask, okay, I mean, so in the beginning, basically you ask, when am I going to leave? I mean, associate with this S1, there's a time at which I will first leave it. Okay, then I'm going to be in the next set. And then there's a time at which I leave this, and so on and so forth. And this time, I mean, there are two things. I mean, these times should, so these lambda bars should tend to zero. Okay, so at the end, of course, if you have the infinite set, I mean, it's zero. The last one is simply zero, but there should be an infinite family. And then that wouldn't be quite enough. I mean, that's sort of but then the other thing is that if you look at the invariant measure of the process and you condition it to be an SI, then the probability that you actually in the set SI minus one should be zero. Okay. So that means simply that I mean, okay, you can always say that, you know, at some moment you leave the set and then you're here, but you may go back and forth and so on. Yes.
The notation seems to indicate that you associate with each set some eigenvalue.
Yeah, I do.
And that's quite a strong assumption.
No, it's no assumption whatsoever. I mean, it's you have a set.
But the eigenvalues.
No, it's an eigenvalue. Oh, sorry. It's an eigenvalue of a generator out of Dirichlet conditions. So I take the. But the question is a very good question because I want to come to that, of course. No, so. So if you have a matrix, okay, and then you put, you know, let's say this is a discrete situation. So you have a matrix, and then you call the Dirichlet generator corresponding to the set A to the matrix where you put zero on all the matrix elements, you know, which have n indices outside of A. And that gives you a new matrix, which is a substochastic matrix, which has a smallest eigenvalue. And this smallest eigenvalue we call lambda bar. That's why it's, I don't call it lambda zero of A, so I call lambda bar of A. So the first statement here is, and I'll come back to the point rather, because it's sort of interesting, also interesting point. So when you say that, okay, if I ask for the process condition to be, let's say, in the set S2, what's the probability that it's still in the set S1? I say this should be small. I mean, it should go to zero eventually.
Which probability is that?
Invariant probability. So I've made an assumption that my Markov process is a reversible Markov chain with reversible measure Q, which is maybe not the probability distribution, but the conditional distribution on S1 is a probability distribution, right? So what does that mean? I mean, it means something very simple. It means that if I'm at a time, you know, suppose that there's space for time to be lambda I, let me call lambda I, the lambda bar of Si, inverse, and lambda I plus 1 inverse, okay, so if I'm in between these times, then I don't have left Si, so the probability that I have remained in Si all the time will be zero, and on the other hand, so I will not have time to leave S2. So I'm somewhere between S1 and S2. And now the second condition basically tells me, so my distribution is essentially Q conditioned to be in Si plus 1. Okay? And then the statement is that if I'm there, I'm not going to be here, but I'm really going to be here. And then this set, you know, to this set, because the fact is that the exit time from the set S2, now this construction, is as large as it is, namely lambda bar 2, is due to the fact that I somehow have difficulties to leave the set S2. Okay, and I'm actually sort of stuck in the set S2. And so then if you have such a situation, you get the, I mean, okay, but what's happening is that somehow your distribution of the process is somehow floating as time goes on, you know, and is sitting on this set and starts, it always concentrates somehow on the sets successively Si plus 1 without Si. So you just sort of float to something at a given speed. Now this is...
Question.
Yeah, sure.
What is the condition you ask on the eigenvalues, the lambda bar I?
Yeah, actually at the moment I only ask that they are an infinite number that converges to zero.
So it seems to me that any chain that has, you know, a spectral gap which is zero or is vanishing small satisfies this.
No.
You take Si as the set of configurations which have energy voucher.
No, it does not, because I do not have this certain condition.
Yes, it depends what the, you know, tilde means.
No, but you mean tilde.
The problem is what probability you choose for Q. And
no, Q is a unique, it's invariant distribution.
Why do you choose the invariant distribution? It's not.
You cannot choose it.
But why should you choose the invariant distribution if you are describing aging?
No, but you see, I mean, okay, you'll see that maybe in examples. I mean, the fact is that if you condition, you see, the fact is you look at this set Si, okay? Now, what is the distribution? You know, what is the distribution? So what you know is that at time t, you have not left Si, okay? On the other hand, you do not have a subset of Si which has, you know, by definition, you do not have a subset of Si which has a smaller eigenvalue. So any subset of Si, you have been able to leave in that time. So basically, you have exploited Si by the time 1 over lambda I, at least roughly. So your distribution is roughly, you know, the invariant distribution condition of not having left the set. That's just a fact. I mean, this is a little bit vague, but if you make this sharp by saying that, you know, that these ratios really tend to zero, then this is, then these become precise statements. Okay. So now, of course, in really aging systems, the situation, I mean, this is, you should see this somehow as a coarse-grained picture, because of course you can have many, 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 many sets, and you will see that. You will see that in examples, or you know. That comes to the question: it is not in general true that these Dirichlet eigenvalues, you can find such subsets that these Dirichlet eigenvalues correspond precisely to eigenvalues of a generator. Okay. In certain situations, this is the case. You will see that. But if you think about it, in most situations where you have aging, you will find that such a scenario is precisely what is true. And we'll see that. Now, the question is, if you have such a scenario, can you translate this into information about the eigenvalue? In fact, is it going to be true that, for instance, the spectral density or the eigenvalue distribution of this matrix is, in fact, related to these eigenvalues, these principal eigenvalues of a suitable choice of these sets lambda I. And this, to some extent, is again, one can see in certain examples that the situation is a little bit more difficult in other cases. So anyway, I mean, this is somehow, this is, I mean, the, you know, I mean, if you want to get some intrinsic characterization, you have to come up with some picture when you try to make it rigorous. So you should also see, I mean, this is a remark here, but in general, in many examples, these sets that you would have here will not correspond, you know, we will have subsets which by themselves have escape times just as big. So instance, in trap models, you'll see that very nicely. So but you may have other systems where this is not the case. I mean, the question that I want to point to with this slide is to say that, can we say if a process is someday, how do we attribute a response time to the system? Okay, and that can be done in a very local way. For instance, you can say, well, if I'm at a particular point here, is it going to be true that the time to leave this point takes, and all that, or if I take a small ball around the point, is this going to take a particular time? And this may, you know, and what you choose as a definition of response time will influence what correlation function will show aging. Okay, but in general, still, if you only had a situation where you don't know anything else, but that as time goes by, you start to live essentially on sets which you leave more and more slowly. In a way, I think that would already be something that you should consider as aging. Now, let me go away from this sort of vague remarks and make a few remarks about references. So the issue of spectral properties and aging has, as far as I remember, the first time been addressed in a paper by Milan and Moutot in 1997 that attempted to, you know, to give a global picture of this and studied a couple of models, in particular the REM-like trap model, but there are some sort of problems and I don't really quite understand all of that, but this is certainly the first time there was a serious attempt to understand this. There is a model in which this relation between spectral theory of random matrices and aging becomes very clear, which is a paper by Gérard Benarous and Alice Guionet and Amir Dembo on the spherical SK model that we have already heard in the talk of of Kuhn. That's very clear because you see, I mean, we have seen this formula actually last yesterday, how you relate, in that case, aging to the spectrum of the random matrix of couplings in the spherical SK model. And there have been, in the last 5 years or so, a number of very interesting papers, in particular by Cécile Montus, Pierre Ledoussal, and partly with Dan Fisher, that have concentrated on, to a large extent, of the Sinai as random walk, about which I will talk later, and that in many ways one have take a perspective that is quite similar to what I have said on the last transparent to some extent, and also that have a number of results on spectra of this model which have been very much inspiring of us, and they propose a method that apparently also is quite powerful, this Mahler-Skupta renormalization group method to study the spectrum, and that gives more or less the same results that we found with another method and that I will talk about later. So this is somehow a very nice set of works that I should recommend.
On the spherical SK model, you should say that it was first done by Kugliandro and Dean.
Probably, yes. Yes. I wanted to cite you also. Okay. Yeah. So my references are, of course, only very partial. So now let's go away from some general considerations and come to concrete models. So the first model that we wanted to look at was the simplest model, and that's just the Bouchaudin REM-like trap model that has been served for in many instances as some model where you can understand something. And so it's a very simple model. I recall you. I mean, so this is just you take the random walk on the complete graph with uniform transition probabilities from any point to the other. It works in continuous time, and the rates are given by the transition rates from a set from point I to any other state j on xi, which is e to the minus ei over n, and ei is an exponential are exponential random variables with parameter alpha less, no, less than 1. Now, this is really an exercise for in linear algebra. You write down the generator, and then you find that this is a very nice a nice matrix, which is one of the few matrices beyond the diagonal matrices which you can actually diagonalize by hand. And so you do that. I mean, that's really an exercise in linear algebra. I skip this transparency because it's the classical result about aging in that model that I don't want to repeat. So what you find is that you have, okay, so you have n eigenvalues, and these eigenvalues are zeros of this function, which is plotted here, which is this function. I don't know why there's nothing here, but that's the problem of the eigenfunctions you can also compute precisely. They're just in this simple form. And then you know, okay, so you see from this form that there's one eigenvalue between each of these values xi, and since the distribution of the values xi, you know that the distribution of the eigenvalue distribution of this matrix converges as n goes to infinity to this simple power law, alpha times x to alpha minus 1 dx on R plus. And the next transparency. Okay, so the interesting, so this was a, this is probably 400 eigenfunction that you see here. And then what you can see that if you order the states by energy instead of by position, you see that these have a very nice structure. So this is one such eigenfunction. It's one here, it has a pole somewhere here. And here's the eigenvalue distribution. And now you see that, here the eigenvalue distribution is for alpha equals 1/2, and here it's for alpha equals to 1.5. And from the point of view of, from the point of view of looking at the spectrum of the eigenfunctions, you don't see really any difference. Well, this alpha doesn't really make any difference. But of course, from the point of view of aging, there's a huge difference. And why is it? I mean, it's because this condition that I had about what you can see is that the invariant distribution in the case that alpha is larger than 1, will not converge to any probability measure in this condition that I had, that you really don't stay in the deep states, after you have reached them, is not fulfilled. And you see that there is a signature in the spectrum of that, namely that's the nature of accumulating eigenvalue of a density of states at zero here is that you have a singularity in the differentiated density of states near zero. And that is precisely what gives aging. Okay. And now you can look at this question of localization. Now in this trap models, of course, there's a very natural way of assigning a response time to a particular site, namely just simply the waiting time of this particular site. So this issue is here completely trivial, almost, because if you go to the one-dimensional Boucher model, as Gerard knows, then there'll be this is maybe not the only possible way, but anyway, this is one way of doing it. And then what you can look at is the process on not on space, but the process on time. So you look at xn of t to be x at x is the energy, xi is the energy associated to site I. So you look at the energy that at the position of the process at time t. And then you can write down a formula where you just take xn of t, and you take a function of that, and you take the expectation with respect to the process of that function, and you can use the spectral representation to write down an explicit, essentially explicit formula, and you can show that this converges if you multiply x by t to some explicit expression, which is some sort of explicit integral. And that is, means nothing else that the quantity t times xn of t, or t divided by the tau n of t by the response time, converges to a random variable with an explicitly computable distribution. So that means that, and this is, as you say here, this is for almost surely for the realization of the environment. So what you have in this model is that as n tends to infinity at a time t, you are at, if you are at t, your waiting time is 1 over t times the random variable. Okay, and this is a times an explicit candidate. So you're distributed on, you know, if you plot yourself on energy space, you have a sort of distribution, but which is sort of around this particular value. And from this fact, you can derive all agent properties on the world that you want, because that means you know precisely where you are, you know, this how you're distributed in waiting time at any given time tw, and then from then on you do, I mean, whatever you do from this starting point, and you can derive this classical aging, but you can also derive aging at different time scales as you want, as you like. So you have here a very explicit way of seeing that, and you can see that all this is derived purely from knowledge on the spectrum. Of course, it's a little bit misleading because here we have, you know, too much knowledge about the spectrum. You know. You shouldn't really do it. So that was one thing. And how am I doing in time? Okay. So, and then, okay, so we can say, oh, you know, that's at least somehow true. Now, the second model that we have been looking on is somehow totally opposite to, I mean, another extreme of an aging system.
May I just come back to the first model, because we are much more used to study aging in terms of certain properties of, say, two-term correlation and
respective functions.
So where is this? I completely lost that relationship.
Yeah, but you see, I mean, that's the meaning. So what is it? You look at the correlation function. Okay, that tells you what the correlation function that you study here, so probability that, so let's say, you don't move the time between time tw and tw plus t. Okay. So you see, I mean, suppose you know that at time, you know, but what is this probability? Okay, I mean, just hide, so maybe for you, over here. So the probability that I don't move xs equal to y, y of s is equal to y of tw for all s. Okay, I cannot see this. Now this is just the sum over all, it's just the sum over all I. The probability, you know, that y tw is equal to I, okay, times e to the minus t times, what is it, xi, right? So now that means it, I mean, it's just the same spirit of also that if I know this distribution, now that's a trivial method to compute the rest. Now that's what I'm saying, but in fact, and that's true in almost all these aging models, if you know the distribution of your process at time tw precisely, then you can, you know, then you can compute also the all these correlation functions, right? So this part is, I mean, to derive this, so I say you can derive this, but you can derive a lot of other correlation functions if you wish, that you ask, for instance, not to be all the time in this set, but you ask yourself to be only at the end time on the set. But if you want to derive a little bit, you know, correlation function, you will realize that what you really need is just to know this distribution asymptotically. And once you have this, I mean, everything else comes out very, very, very easily.
Sorry, you said perhaps already that what is the sequence of SI in this example?
I see. The sequence of SIs would be the set of all I's such that XI is equal to a given number. Right? I mean, in that case, it's right. In that case, it's basically, you know, so exactly. So you just classify. I mean, you color. I mean, I wanted to make a picture with colors, but I'm very bad at making pictures. You just color your state space by some color code which represents waiting times, essentially. Now, in this model, this is very simple because there's a clear way to associate waiting time to a particular point. And then you would have this set here, it would be consist of, okay, it wouldn't look like this, but on a lot of individual points. And what I also said is that there is, of course, you know, here in that model, you can, you know, it's not only that this, you don't leave this set only at the time corresponding to this time, but you even don't leave a point before it. So therefore, you can define a very local correlation function, which is this correlation function here, that says, what's the probability that I'm all the time in this particular point, and measuring reaction or response time by this fact, okay? And you get this answer, okay? You could also say, we could also say that what's, you know, one of the other correlation functions that people like to use is the probability that I And at the end point, I'm again back in this point, which would allow you to make sort of small excursions, and which in this model makes no difference whatsoever. But if you take the trap model in dimension one, this makes a total, huge difference, and you have not, for this other correlation function, you don't have aging, but you have sub-aging, as was shown by Gérard and Jiří Černý and, I guess, Tom Mountford. Was it? No. Only you and Jiří, right. Okay. And so you see that, and in fact, if you don't know what your model is, you see what correlation function you would have to use that would show aging would depend on the nature of such sets. But even in the worst case, if you just say, define the correlation function that I'm still in the same set, then this correlation function would show aging, but you wouldn't know how to describe the set. Right? If you don't know anything about your model, except that it's supposed to show localization in some sort of sense, and it moves around in slow and slower spaces, you wouldn't immediately know how to define a correlation function. And that's somehow a problem. Okay, I hope this answered
a bit. Yes.
Yeah. And we will see this in the next model again, because in the next model the situation is different, but okay, let me just go to the next model. I don't have too much time. So the Sinai's random walk is very well known. It's just a random walk on Z with transition probabilities omega x, which are IID random variables that are between some values A and B. So with probability omega x, if you have point x, you go make a step up to x plus 1, and with probability 1 minus omega x, you make a step down. And so this is this has been studied, I don't have it, 25 years ago or something by Sinai, and he proved a remarkable result. I mean, if you take a sort of symmetric situation, that is the expectation of a logarithm of omega x over 1 minus omega x is 0, then you have this remarkable localization property that tells you that there is a deterministic random process, omega nx. Now, what is a deterministic random process? It's one that depends only on the omegas, but doesn't depend on the Markov chain. Okay, so you look at the omegas, and then you can compute this sequence of variables, omega n of omega. And then what the Sinai proved is that if you look at the process at time xn, you divide by logarithm of n squared, and then you are close to this particular deterministic process omega x. So the process is slaved by a completely deterministic sequence of values. And this happens in probability, with probability tending to 1 with respect to this to this process. And then in 2001, Denbo, Alice Guionet and Professor Tony, they looked at this from the point of view of aging, and they derived an aging result. And the aging result is a little bit unusual because, and you'll see that maybe later, because it's, again, they ask me, what is the probability that at time n and at a time n to the power of h, so it's not at a time n plus a waiting time, but you have to really go to enormously bigger times in order to see something interesting. So you go to time n and you go to time n to 8. And then the probability that this is true converges to some explicitly computed number, h to the minus 2 times some other number. So it's an explicit computation. And this quantity here is, in fact, turns out to be a completely deterministic object in the sense that this is nothing but the probability that mn is the same as mn to the power h. Okay, so it's something that is only a property of the random environment. Okay.
Anton, can I try to understand it? For h is 1, why don't I get
h is 1. You get 1 times 5 thirds plus 2 thirds, which is 1.
There's a minus sign.
Did I put... Yeah, there's a minus sign here, probably. Yes. It should be 1. Sure, I mean, that's why it's 5 thirds and 2 thirds. Well, it's a misprint. Yeah, sure. Of course, that is okay. Anyway, but this is... So again, you see, I mean, So you have somehow aging in that case. So what we wanted to do and thought that would be not too difficult is to compute the spectrum. I have probably no time to show you any more details. So, but that's just a little bit, just a very brief remark. So this, of course you know that, this one-dimensional case, any one-dimensional nearest neighbor process is reversible, and it is actually corresponds to a random walk in a potential. And this potential, you can compute explicitly in terms of the W's, and it turns out to be just a random walk. And then you have somehow, you see that you have a reversible measure from e to the minus square root of n times, square root of n times, if you look at the box, minus n, n, and you rescale it, you get this is such an expression. And then this object here, this Vn of x converges to a Brownian motion. So that means that you have all the statistics of this random potential in which you walk around completely explicitly at your hand, and you can sort of study everything. So this is how things look like. You have somehow a random walk here. And now what you can do is to compute you can take a box of some given size n, and then you want to compute the set of smallest eigenvalues and the smallest eigenfunctions that are associated to that. And that is rather not so difficult in this one-dimensional setting, and it is amounts to finding the statistics of the lowest values. I don't want to go into details how you define these values in the Brownian motion, but there's a way of defining what is called H minima, and these are sort of regions where you're trapped with barriers of height at least H, and then you sort of classify in a suitable way all these minima. So you have a picture and you classify this into valleys, and you have to do it sort of in a right way that takes some time to explain, which I don't have. And then you will find that for each of these valleys, there corresponds precisely one small eigenvalue, and these eigenvalues have a property that you can compute them very explicitly. So the kth eigenvalue here then is given by essentially exponential minus square root of the depth of this value, which is of course not very surprising, and you can essentially identify the coefficients in front of that, but they are sort of random variables which are not very important here. And then the main point is you have the spacing of these. You have statistically the spacing of these eigenvalues. So one is always by a factor exponential minus delta times square root of n smaller than the next one. So they're really very rapidly decreasing. That means there's a very strong accumulation of eigenvalues near zero, just like in the model, but much, much stronger than this is. And this was essentially also found in this paper by Leroux-Salle and Montes. And you can also characterize the eigenfunction, and the eigenfunctions, they're very more precise as they're written here, but essentially these eigenfunctions are almost, up to terms which are very small, equal to constants. Essentially they are constant on the attractors of the corresponding value. So the eigenfunction corresponding to the deepest value here is essentially constant everywhere, and then the eigenfunction corresponding to this value here is constant roughly here. And here when we are a little bit negative, this is quite important that we are a little bit negative here, of course, and so on. So you have a very good control of this, and then you can go and basically write down things that you like in terms of eigenfunctions and eigenvalues. In particular, you can look at this localization result of Sinai, and you can derive it basically from the fact that you write a representation of this for V to be in a certain set in terms of eigenfunctions and eigenvalues. And then you see that, of course, in this expansion, there are only those terms where this quantity here tends to 1 which play a role. And interesting, so you can now choose the starting set of all. You take a finite set, and then you look at the process that evolves inside this set. And one of the interesting and maybe a little bit non-trivial things here is that the eigenvalues which become large, will become quickly irrelevant. So the sum is always cut off at a particular place that depends on time. Time here, I guess, is n for some reason. So there are these terms that start to tend to zero. But then there are a lot of terms in principle which count. Okay. On the other hand, you can cut off all the terms which have smaller eigenvalues by reducing the size of the box that you that you want. So the simplest thing is to just, so the simplest thing is to choose a box in such a way that there's only one term which survives, and then the terms will give you a very precise expression for the probability to be in the set, which will allow you to recover this Sinai result and in even much more precise form than you had it. But then what somehow, you know, I find, maybe I have a moment to say this, interesting is that you that there's a phenomenon, of course, and that has to do with this localization, that at, which is really non-trivial, that at time, you know, at a time t, you're not in a deeper state than you can be, which corresponds to even smaller eigenvalues, and you're not in a lower state. You know, the lower state that comes from the fact that in this expansion all the eigenvalues, I mean, all the contributions have tended to zero because you have each minus lambda times n. And then the fact that, but the fact that you're not in a deeper state in a full expansion is due to cancellation, because you get contributions. I mean, so for instance, you take a box which contains two minima, the minimum which you have already reached and the minimum which you have not yet reached, then you will see that there are actually two contributions which are non-zero, but there's a cancellation. Okay, so if you compute the probability to be in the deeper set, you will find that one of the terms is actually going to be equal to 1 and the other term is going to be precisely minus 1. That comes from the sort of small negative parts of these eigenfunctions which give you a cancellation. And then, okay, so then the last observation is then you can use this, for instance, to have a slightly different description, which somehow I like, of in that model, which is... So the following, you can define, you can look at a sequence of values lambda 2 n prime, say a sequence of boxes, and you can place yourself at a time scale t divided by this lambda 2 n. So it's precisely a sequence of times at which you are just in the process of leaving one of the minima to go to the next one. So you're just at this particular moment, you're jumping, and then you see it looks like a metastable situation. You have an exponential. You have an exponential behavior, the probability that you are at this particular random sequence of times that you're just in this set yet is e to the minus 1 times e to the minus t. So you're just arriving at this particular stage exponentially as if you were, as if you were going to equilibrium. It looks like, you see, so it's a sequence of random times at which you are behaving as if you would go to equilibrium, and you feel like you're going to equilibrium, but then, of course, as time goes on, I mean, then we go to the next one. Okay, so this, maybe I have already talked too much, and I thank you for your patience.
Is there a simple counterexample where a criterion like having a diverging eigenvalue density at the origin is not enough to give you aging?
Yeah, it's a good question, actually. That, of course, is a natural conjecture. That's what you... I guess this is what you should need, right? But I can't prove it. I mean, you see what... And it has to do a little bit with this thing. I mean, if you just take a, you see, depends of course also what you really call aging. But if you just think of, I mean, just take a matrix with some eigenvalues e to the minus t times a matrix, then you see, I mean, there's nothing that will not tell you that when the modes corresponding to very very small eigenvalues will not die out. Okay, so. They only die out much, much later. But in a way, I would think that aging should be more related to being really at the, if you write this full eigenvalue expansion, somehow in the Sinai model, you have what you see is that you are at time t living, on a contribution on the place where the eigenfunction corresponding to this particular, time, is located. You're not at both eigenfunctions, the eigenfunction which correspond to smaller values. And I don't know. I mean, this seems to be at least sort of something which I'm not sure is always going to be clearly guaranteed. But I don't know. I mean, it could be that. I mean, that's unsatisfactory. I mean, I would like to know the answer to this question. I don't.
Perhaps a comment of P
Peter question. If you take a ferromagnet in the Griffith phase, then I think the spectral gap is zero, and still you, I mean, a physicist wouldn't say that you're radiating. I don't know, I mean.
What's the shape of the spectrum there?
But what Peter is saying is that you don't know. But you see, you may have no spectral gap, but the density of states may look like this. So that you have, you know, that what you want for aging is more. You want to have something which looks like this. So there's an accumulation of, I mean, you know, the density becomes higher as you go to zero rather than becoming low. And this should certainly distinguish between aging and non-aging. This certainly works in the Bouchot model.
I think I have a counterexample to what you're saying. You take superposition of uninteracting two-level systems, each of them having a time scale for flip, which is distributed according to this parable. And then you have this, the gap is, there's no gap and there's a diverging density of states, but it still doesn't age.
Yeah.
So you see each particle can only go to two positions, but with a random rate.
I have a feeling, I mean, I think in this early paper by that I cited, I mean, they were sort of proposing something of that type. But I think it is, you know, to have aging, you need to know something more about eigenfunctions. I mean, it is not just the distribution of eigenvalues that will give you aging. So there's also certain properties of the eigenfunctions which are quite important.
And it's also this knowledge of the eigenfunctions that will tell you what observables you should try to
of do. Course, aging this is of course, yeah, sure. Right. Then once, okay, so of course, I guess there's a way of doing everything by in a completely abstract way. You know, by just writing down the, you know, spectral representation, and then you cook up something. But maybe that's, I'm not feeling very satisfied with our state of knowledge in this thing, but let's say, I think I could say that like Francesco, maybe on next program in a few years we can report on it. Further progress in this.